Hey everybody, welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, the executive editor of Imbibe, and it is June of 2021. Memorial Day is behind us, and there's a long summer ahead that'll look very different from where we were last year. At about this time last year, Black Lives Matter protests were taking place in all 50 states and around the world following the murder of George Floyd. And around the beginning of this month, news headlines increasingly turned to the centennial of one of the worst racist massacres in American history, the destruction of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that took place in 1921. Marking that centennial, on June 1st, there was an announcement from Fawn Weaver, the founder and CEO of Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey and an alumnus of our Imbibe 75, about the launch of the Uncle Nearest Venture Fund, a $50 million project to invest in minority-founded and owned spirits brands. For this episode, I was lucky enough to get a few minutes on the phone with Fawn Weaver, who was calling in from her office at the soon-to-open Nearest Green Distillery in Shelbyville, Tennessee, to talk about the Venture Fund, the first recipients of that funding, and what the future holds in store for Uncle Nearest. Very much for taking the time to chat. I really do appreciate it. And as we were saying before we started recording, things are definitely busy right now for you, but we wanted to get in touch for a couple of reasons. First off, you're someone we've been happy to have in the magazine in the past as part of our Imbibe 75 coverage regarding your work with Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey. And we like to check in from time to time to see how things are progressing. But also, on June 1st, you announced the launch of a $50 million venture fund to invest in minority-founded and owned spirits brands. Could you tell us a little bit about why you decided to introduce this fund and the significance of why you're launching it now?
Yeah, well, you know, for us, we've been doing this for a while, not necessarily from the capital side, but really helping minority-owned businesses within the spirit industry. So coming in, Uncle Nearest is the most successful African-American founded and owned brand, and quite frankly, probably Black. I say African-American just because we don't track numbers outside of the U.S. But when you think about that, we're less than 4 years old. We should not be the best-selling of all time. And so that says that we have not really done a good job with helping to develop the brands and the companies within the spirit industry of people of color and of women. And so we began doing that because we, as a team, realized not only did we want to see more of that in our industry, but my team isn't a complaining kind of team. Rather than saying all the things that are wrong, you're never going to really hear us talk about the things we think are wrong, because we'd rather just fix them. And we identified this as being a problem in the industry, and we got to work on it a couple of years ago. And we've just been plugging away. So this is really just a continued graduation of, first, we were helping different minority-owned businesses with their branding and their sales and their distribution. And we've just continued to kind of build on to that. But a few of them were really, really great brands, and we'd help them with their business plans and a lot of things strategy-wise, but then realized that capital wasn't really there for them, because although capital is very easy to find, it is one of those things where it comes to you when you're already successful. And so I get inquiries every single day that I turn down. And at some point, I realized not too long ago, if I stopped turning them down and began rerouting the money to invest in other minority-owned brands that I believe have the ability to be the next Uncle Nearest, and not only helps our industry in terms of diversifying the ownership and the leadership of our industry, but it also really begins to elevate a lot of these brands that are owned by people of color and women. So that's really all it was. It's not like I had to go out and raise money. All of these people were already asking to give me money for Uncle Nearest to invest, but I've been done raising money for Uncle Nearest for quite some time and don't intend to do it again. And so it's really, since I was getting the inquiries, how can I then take that and tell these same investors, listen, no, Uncle Nearest is not available to you, but let me tell you what brands are, and then just bring them all into a fund. And so that's where it came from.
And as we're saying, you know, with the launch on June 1st, that date has some significance for a venture.
Absolutely. Well, for us, that has significance in general. And so for those, a lot of people in America were just learning this past weekend for the first time about the destruction of Black Wall Street. And it is something that began on May 30th, 1921, so 100 years ago, and a white young elevator girl, I think she was only about 15 years old, was working the elevator, and what would have been called a colored guy at that time came in, and something happened on the elevator that caused the elevator to shake, and he bumped into her. And so it took it from that to all of a sudden, he stepped on her toes, he assaulted her. I mean, it just kept going on and on. And in a newspaper article that came out, then made it just, it just took it through the roof. So long story short, the whites were trying to lynch this Black kid. And in this area called Greenwood, or better known as Black Wall Street, it had really become this wealthy, affluent neighborhood, a little bit like what people consider Atlanta today, but it was Black business people, and they had done very, very well for themselves. And they created about 35 square blocks that was just their own. They did business with one another. And so they were constantly recycling that money, and everyone did well. Well, you had this underlying racism and white people that did not like to see all of these Black people not under their control, not under their power. And so there was already tension there. So as soon as this happened, they really used this as a catalyst, not, I don't believe, to really go after this one guy. They use, and the reason why we can say that and believe that is because this one guy is the only guy that didn't end up dead in all of this. And so it really was something that they used in order to spark a massive fight with the African-American communities. And on June 1st, there was a sound of an alarm. They were getting help from law enforcement. They were getting help from the government, who then gave them guns. That was what was going on. And the sound went off, and all of the whites descended upon this 35 square blocks and lit up the entire thing, killed about 300 people, wounded who knows how many, and they decimated using planes and bombs and everything they could possibly use. They rallied together and they destroyed all 35 square blocks of what is known as Black Wall Street. And so on the 100th anniversary, again, going back to this thought process of, yes, we need to learn the history. Yes, we need to acknowledge it and atone for it. But now what? What do we do next? What is that thing that we can do next? And so for us, the idea was, why don't we recreate Black Wall Street within the spirit business? And that's where the $50 million came from. And the $50 million is, when you look at what was destroyed, $2 million is what is estimated to have been destroyed in Black Wall Street. Now that's in 1921. And so at this time, it would be worth about $26.7 million is what was lost to the African Americans who lived in that community. And so our fund is about double that amount. And the two that we announced that we are investing in first, one being Sorrel LaCour, the second being Equiano.
And with these two recipients of the initial $2 million investment, Jack from Brooklyn, obviously based in Brooklyn with Jackie Summers, and Equiano based in London, we've had both Jackie and Ian on the podcast in recent months. What about these two projects stood out to you as good candidates for this initial round?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it was super simple. Equiano, I met Ian in London back in, I think this was maybe 2019. And he came to an Uncle Nearest event and shared with me what he did as the global rum ambassador. Number one, I thought it was the wildest thing that he had created this job a decade ago and went to all the rum companies and said, listen, I don't want to work for any one of you. I want to work for the whole category. And so that in of itself, I thought was so bold. I wanted to know more about him. And the more I came to know Ian firsthand, you don't invest in brands and product, you invest in founders. And the more I got to know him, I had said to him, if you ever launch a brand, I will be first in line to invest. And when it came time for his series A for him to raise money for it, I literally sent him a WhatsApp message and said, I want the whole round. And it wasn't just because Equiano, I believe, has the strongest brand story. But then on top of that, you have Ian Burrell behind this juice. It just was brilliant altogether. So Sorrell, with Jackie Summer, I knew, or I came to learn more recently that when he filed for his DSP, his distillery license in 2012, it made him the first Black to own a distillery in the United States that we know of. And we'll say post-prohibition, but we actually don't know anyone even pre-prohibition. So we can easily say he's the first that we know of. But what was so special to me about Sorrell Liqueur is that I didn't even know it was no longer in business. And the reason I didn't know is the bartenders would talk about Sorrell like they were still serving it. And people just absolutely loved this product. And so when I found out that he was in need of funding, and I found out some of the things he had gone through in order to try to get funding, where people would string him along and then they would change the terms at the end, which is very, very common. And I learned all these different things. I said, well, send me some Sorrell, send me a sample bottle. And when I tell you, I would say Saint Germain and the Domaine de Canton are the two liqueurs that I utilize the most. And I've had a bottle of each of those in my cabinet at home probably for the last year and a half, and each of them probably still have a full half a bottle left. I got the bottle of Sorrell, and my husband and I drank the entire 750 milliliters in one weekend. And after I tasted Sorrell, I understood why the bartenders absolutely love it and why so many of them are rallying for him to come back like they are. I don't know any other brand in this industry that the press and the bartenders support as much as Sorrell. And so to me, it is a disservice for our industry not to have Sorrell in it. And so to be able to bring that back was also a no-brainer.
Oh, absolutely. I first came across Jackie and Sorrell, I think it may have been 2012, 2013, when he was first getting started with it. And exactly what you said, the bottles didn't last long here. we went through them pretty quickly. And it's, you know, just so delicious. And it was something really fantastic. And it's been a real kind of, you know, vacancy on my liquor shelf, not having that around. Now, obviously, this is just the start. As you look at the months and the years to come, what kinds of things are you taking into consideration when you look at potential candidates for funding?
Yeah, so the brand for me is, I am looking specifically for brand founders that truly believe that there is no sky's the limit, like they don't believe there is a limit, that they are all in. That means that they are not trying to build, to flip, to sell to someone else. They're really trying to build a legacy brand. They're trying to build something special. And they're trying to build it at a growth pace that isn't normal, isn't common in this industry. In this industry, there's always been this thought process of, you know, you grow it really slow and you go into one market and you see what happens. And that hasn't worked for anybody. That's why there's no independent brands that are succeeding in this industry. It is like a curse to tell people to do that if they are independent and coming in. But sure enough, everybody tells people to follow the same broken model. And so I want people that want to come out of the gates pedal to the metal and are willing to put in the work, and not only put in the work, but aren't trying to take it back out of the company. So Uncle Nearest, for instance, no one in this company has pulled anything out. I am still one of, if not the lowest full-time paid employee, and everything goes back into the company, every penny. And so I'm looking for founders like that, first and foremost. Then the second thing I'm looking for is a brand story that gives people chills when it's told. When I tell the story of Equiano to people, literally the first comment that people say every single time is, I just got chills. I am looking for those brand stories that the bartenders want to keep talking about. Like, it makes them light up to be able to share those stories. And then the third thing is that product has to be something that's going to win every award in their category, that it is done with absolute excellence. If we've got those three things, then it goes from me to our executive team. If they believe that this brand has the potential to be the next Uncle Nearest, then it then goes to the founders of that brand and that company being able to pitch the entire Uncle Nearest sales team, which we're still small, but we're a good size. We've got about 50 salespeople now worldwide, and being able to pitch to all of them on Zoom with everybody having samples in hand And after they do that pitch, every single one of our sales and marketing team members vote anonymously. Do you believe that this brand has the potential to be the next Uncle Nearest? And if at least 70% of our sales and marketing team believe it, then it goes to our board, which I've selected, that has some incredible veterans on it, some really, really smart people, former chief marketing officer for Dropbox, the current head of partnerships for Google, the former chief brand officer for Brown-Forman, the current executive vice president of global public policy and external affairs for Sony Pictures, who happens to be my husband. We've put together a really incredible team, and then it goes to them to determine the valuation and what we will invest. And that's essentially the product, the process. But what we're trying to do is not create a bunch of small brands. We got enough small brands. When it comes to people of color and women, where we're going to really make the biggest dent is if we can create more Uncle Nearest's, and those people of color and those women go back and do the exact same thing that we're doing. And we just keep raising more up.
And now, while the Uncle Nearest Venture Fund is obviously the big news from you this week, we can't have you on without asking you about the Nearest Green Distillery in Shelbyville, which is also reopening very soon. Is that right?
Yes, I am in my office. All the construction is happening outside of my office right now in the rain. The workers have not stopped going because we've got a couple of weeks left. And they really only have about a week left of being able to do all the finishing touches. And then we've got to do the massive cleanup. Yeah, we've got 270 acres. Most people don't know this, but we're also in the process right now. We're actually in escrow to purchase an additional 50 acres along the frontage of our property down just to the south of us. So this will actually be more than about 325 acres by the middle of the summer. And we're just continuing to grow this thing out. But when people come now, they look at this and going, okay, we didn't get it when you guys began, but you were serious when you said you're building this for the next generation. This distillery will stand the test of time. A lot of the distilleries, the smaller ones, they'll come and they'll go, but this is being built out in such a way that even the next generation can't mess it up.
Well, as you see this distillery stand the test of time and move in the years ahead, where do you plan to take it? What kinds of whiskeys and spirits can we anticipate seeing further down the line once this is fully operational?
I can tell you what you won't see is flavor. We have every intention of sticking to what Nearest Green would have done in his time. I venture to say, you know, future generations might test out different things, but for our generation, when we're talking about cementing the legacy of Nearest Green, the most important thing that we can do is to figure out how to make some of the best Tennessee whiskey this world has ever seen, because that is what Nearest Green did when he was alive. And so we have our master blend coming out. We do a trilogy drop on June 19th when we reopen the distillery. We open up phase two, and that master blend is the first time our own juice is in there. So, and that, I mean, our four-year-old, just the maturation, the color, the nose, the flavor profile, I am so unbelievably excited about that. But right now we're going to do it as a part of blends and slowly but surely begin to release our own and begin moving away from source product.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to checking that out myself in the years to come. And Fawn, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and to go over both the venture fund and what we can expect from Uncle Nearest in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time and working around my crazy construction schedule.
You can find out more about Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey, the Nearest Green Distillery, and the Uncle Nearest Venture Fund at UncleNearest.com. And that's it for today. Subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app to keep up with future episodes of Radio Imbibe, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest to see what we're up to on the day-to-day. We've got you covered with more stories and recipes over at ImbibeMagazine.com, and if you're not already a subscriber to the print and or digital issues of Imbibe, then here's your opportunity to change that. Just click on the link in this episode's notes and we'll take care of it. I'm Paul Clark. This is Radio Imbibe. Catch you next time.